Welcome to White Rabbit Podcast with Catalyst Jones, where your reality might be challenged. So leave your feelings at the fucking door and let's dive down some rabbit holes.
Liberal advisory. Truthful content.
Our children being ritualistically sodomized by deep state operatives of reptilian descent.
Reptilian? You mean like lizard people?
That's right.
Are you still talking about Jeffrey Epstein? This guy's been talking about for years.
If you want to stop me, you're going to have to fucking kill me!
Welcome, Catalyst Jones. How are you, brother?
Dude, you must have been down the rabbit hole as long as I have.
I mean, I can't believe you're asking a question on Epstein at a time like this.
Eventually, you get to the juice box people.
It's sitting on my desk to be reviewed, meaning the file.
We choose to go to the moon. Well,
that was a joke about the world being flat, right?
Was it?
Excuse me. Has anybody seen, White Rabbit?
Welcome, fellow truthers and conspiracy junkies, to another banger episode of White Rabbit. I am your host, Marisa, from the Ladybug Line, and today I am honored and definitely amped to introduce you all again to the one and the only Catalyst Jones, committed seeker, truth speaker, and feather ruffler extraordinaire. But there's so much more than meets the eye to this man. And today I'm here to get a behind the scenes scoop on the blood, the sweat, the tears, and the heart that have made him the man he is today. Catalyst, thank you for having me here with you. I'm excited to hear your stories and welcome to the birthday fucking hot seat. How are you feeling?
Let's fucking go. That was an awesome intro. I'm honored to be a guest on my show with you sitting in the driver's seat. This is fucking awesome. That was an amazing intro and I appreciate it. I'm a bit nervous to be on my own show, and that's kind of a good thing. So I'm excited to get in here, spill some beans about some shit, and hopefully my listeners will get to know a little bit more about me.
Yeah, man, let's do it up. My heart is also pounding, so we're a good match today. I wanted to start by asking you something simple that I know will lead to a lot more. I know you've been through a lot in the last 12 months, and I don't even know the half of it, which is why I think I'm the host today, because I'm going to learn a lot about you that I have no idea. But if you had to pick three words to sum up the last 12 months of your life, what three words would that be?
Wow, coming out the gates, huh? I would say healing, learning, and detrimental.
Wow. Ooh, bomb drops. Okay, let's dive into the healing. I'm going to invite you to go back to visit with little Catalyst, whatever age you choose. And if you had to give a fair warning or a little bit of advice to that little version of you about what would come in this past year, what would you say to him?
Oh man, I had the biggest spark when I was younger, and honestly, like, fed into that whole bullshit that they tell you when you're graduating eighth grade in high school, and they're like, the world is yours. You can do anything you want to. You can be anything you want to be when you grow up. And I think Bruce Jenner is the only one that actually was able to be anything he wanted to be when he grew up. Because I used to have a joke that when people were like, you can be anything you want to be, I'd be like, well, I want to be an old Asian lady. So, and that was a joke, but nowadays that can actually fucking happen. But
sure.
But what I would tell myself, man, is look, life is gonna fucking stomp on your face, but keep getting up with an even bigger smile each time.
Aw, super sweet. We're crying already, guys. So in the last year, with the word healing, what was the catalyst, to use your name, for the healing?
Well, the biggest thing would be the decision to get sober. And in getting sober, I'm learning to kill my ego. And those are two huge things, as well as having tools to deal with my emotions rather than just reaching for a bottle every time things get hard, happy, or any occasion whatsoever. I was the type of drunk that was like, today fucking sucks, I need a drink. Or it's like, dude, today's going to be so fucking awesome, let's get fucked up. You know, like, it didn't matter. And so being able to come out of that and to open my eyes to what potential I truly do have, and to be able to truly see that, like, I'm not really a victim of anyone other than myself. And I've played victim a lot my entire life, even recently. And I still catch myself doing that often, you know, like this morning, for example, there was, in a podcasting group chat that I'm in, they posted the top 100 conspiracy podcasts of 2025. And I read through it. And I, like, before I even get to top 10, I was like, I see my buddy Josh Monday on there. And I was like, fuck yeah, dude. Fuck yeah. We're hitting the charts, right? And then I read down below and then I see, like, Cult of Conspiracy didn't even hit the top 10. And I'm like, now wait a minute, man. That doesn't make any sense to me, because I'm friends with both of these guys. And I know, like, not exact numbers, but I know what these guys get as far as their listens and downloads. And that was backwards. And so then I'm reading through, and like Sam Tripley's Tinfoil Hat Show barely even made the top 100. And then I'm like seeing all these people that are like just barely starting out. And that's been my biggest battle with getting sober is the fucking ego. Because I've gone this entire time that I've been podcasting with this chip on my fucking shoulder that I'm the host of the White Rabbit and everybody knows who the fuck I am. And if they not, they better fucking recognize, type of shit. And it's like, that's no way to fucking look at it. Like, I wouldn't want to have somebody like that on my show, you know? But like, I was so wrapped up in my alcoholism and my ego that I didn't see that that's the type of person that I was being, you know? And it's like, it's really difficult to swallow too, especially have to swallow that sober and deal with my emotions without reaching for a bottle has been the hardest fucking thing this year. On top of something I'm sure you're going to ask me about that we'll get into.
Yeah, absolutely. Dang. So
answer,
I'm going to ask you, sorry, go on.
Just go. What was the original question?
I have no idea. But you covered it. You absolutely answered it. So well done. Bravo. If someone came up to you and said, how do you stay sober in the hardest moments? Like, what is your driver? What would you tell them? Knowing that for them, it might be different, but for you, what is that driver?
There's three, and they're both equally as important. No, not equally as important, but they're three huge things. And one is, I don't want my daughter to keep living with an alcoholic father. That's number one. She's 20 years old now. And, you know, like, I don't want to jinx it or anything, but eventually I'm going to be a grandfather, and I don't want to be a fucking drunk grandfather that isn't around to be there the way that I should have been there for my daughter. And I'm not going to downplay it and say that I was a shitty parent, because I don't know very many men my age that were a single father for as long as I was and did it the way, as long as I did it, but I could have done it a lot fucking better. Like, if alcohol wasn't in the equation, if I wasn't chasing pussy constantly and chasing dreams of becoming some famous rapper and shit, then my daughter probably would have had a lot better life. Another driving force for me to not drink is in 2025, in late September, give me a second. Damn, I don't know if I can talk about this.
Up to you. You want to circle back?
Okay. All right, I'm good. Hang on. Um, So there is somebody really important in my life. We had a really, really fucking toxic relationship because neither one of us were sober long enough to enjoy what we had. Like, she would be sober and I'd be fucking off, or it'd be the opposite. And we were together for a really long time, off and on, for damn near 10 years, engaged twice. And, you know, went through a lot of fucking shit together. And she ended up going to rehab at the beginning of the year, and with my sister. And my sister just hit her 1 year sobriety yesterday. So fucking shout out to you, Sarah. I love you. And and so she went with my ex, and they were in there together, and they both got out at the same time, obviously. And my sister going strong still. My ex is in the ground because she decided she didn't want to stop drinking, and she thought she really felt alone. We were talking a lot in the last 4 or 5 months of her living. And then I decided that I was going to get sober. And so I got sober like a month before she died. And wow. when she was going through all that, she had been in and out of the hospital multiple times because her liver was failing from drinking, and she still didn't stop drinking. But it had gotten to the point where her liver was like toxifying her to where her thoughts were insane. And her son and her mom are fucking pieces of shit, to be honest with you, and saw an opportunity to take advantage and prey on her, and sold her house out from underneath her, the only thing that she had left in her life. And so she spent the last couple weeks of her life living in her car. And I was losing my apartment at the same exact time. And so I was trying to figure something out for both of us so that she would be able to get sober and we could start hitting meetings together and I could get a roof over her head. And I was losing my apartment, so I was trying to get a roof over my head. And then I was going to go pick her up and then bring her. And then I got into this motel room. I had enough money to pay for a couple weeks, and I got into this motel room. And then I kept texting her and I wasn't hearing anything back from her. And the day before I moved into the motel room, I was like, look, I don't know. I might have to go to Oregon. Like, shit's fucked. And the last text message I got from her was just come get me first. And then so like a couple of days had gone by and I'm in the motel room frantically trying to get a hold of her. I noticed she's not posting anything on Facebook. So I posted something on her page asking if somebody had seen or heard from her, that I was going to file a missing persons report because it wasn't like her to go so long without telling me something. And then her son hit me up and said that they found her in the parking lot at the Mushroom, which is a bar where down the street from where she used to live. And she had ended up choking on her own vomit and died in the car. And so she never did get sober, and she had a lot of potential. And so that is another thing that helps me stay sober, is looking back and seeing like shit sucks. Shit sucks all the time. Shit sucks a lot, but alcohol makes it worse. And like, what a fucking horrible way to go out. Alcohol is not a good way to go out. And, you know, like I kind of want to push myself and see what I can become. And so now at 46 fucking years old, I'm like, let's see what the fuck I can do if I just take all of these things out of the equation. And so those are the three things, like the potential, losing somebody close to me, and wanting to be there for my daughter and any future grandchildren.
Damn. Mm. That's a lot. My heart goes out to you for that experience, and also to her. Do you believe in life after death? Do you believe that she can hear you when you speak to her?
That's iffy. You know, I don't believe in death. So there's that.
Right. Me neither.
I'm also like back and forth on my beliefs, you know, because I am very heavily Christian, but I also am not stupid when it comes to occultic teachings and those rabbit holes I was diving down before the Bible. And so like, I take truths from here And I take truths from here and I put my truths together. And in the Bible, Jesus says that talking to the dead is useless. And so I also believe that when we die, we become one with what we were when we decided to come here and go through this experience. And if that is the case, then there is a chance that when I'm shedding tears for her like this, she's down there laughing at me, or up there laughing at me, right? So so I can go 50-50 on either way. You know, like I'm not really sure what happens to us after we die. All I know is that energy can't be destroyed. So it can only manifest into something else and keep going.
I love this answer. I think this really speaks to who you are, where you're, and I know I told you this recently, that one of my favorite things about you is that you're open to changing your mind and you're open to saying you were wrong and you're open to other potential possibilities for opinion. And I think that melding your belief system from Christianity and then the occult and who you are instinctively is just the best way any of us can go about life. But my question was going to be, and feel free to say, fuck you, I don't want to do that. Do you want to give her a shout out right now and just tell her all the things you fucking love and respect about her so that everyone else can get to know her just a little bit in this moment?
You know, I really appreciate that, but I honestly, I think that I've said the things that I need to say to her. And like I said, it was a toxic fucking relationship. And I was, right. I was grateful, honestly, to be out of it. And it was a huge stress on me that she was going through what she was going through because I felt obligated that I had to do something. Sure. And honestly, like, this is going to sound really fucking bad because I love her to death. And I wanted nothing but the best for her, but this is what's best for her.
Mm-hmm. I hear that. That's sorry, I just spilled my water. Awesome. That's
you're good.
That's epic to say, you know, to just be able to say that out loud. That takes me to the next word that you use for your last 12 months. That word was detrimental. At least that's the one that's coming up right now. Can you explain that word and why you chose that?
Yes.
Oh, somebody's stripping already. Getting down to the birthday.
Man, it's getting hot up in here. I turned the fireplace on. Fireplace turned it on. I turned it on right before the show because it's pretty gnarly outside. And it's starting to heat up pretty good in here. But detrimental. Yeah, let's get into that. Because I started out the year living in a mansion. Like, not like, oh, that's a really big house. Like a full-on, legit fucking mansion. And in this mansion, they had a full-sized bar. Like, better than most dive bars you go to. And that was the absolute worst fucking place that I could be. And not only that, I'm not going to disclose anything because some of the people that listen to my show know the people that I were living with and listen to their shows as well. So I'm not going to mention anything, but there was a lot of things happening in that house that weren't good to be around. And so, you know, looking from the outside in, you would think, holy shit, dude, this guy has everything. He's a podcaster. He lives in a mansion and, you know, like fucking he gets to talk to celebrities and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But that's not really how
you're going to be that, the Asian lady, your dream, right? Your childhood dream.
Yeah. Yeah. I only said that as a joke, by the way.
Sure.
I always used to say things for shock value. I was like Steve O, just never took it as far as he did. I would never get breast implants on my forehead. So
did he do that?
You know, he talked about it for a year and I don't know if not on his forehead, just breast implants for the end of his tour. And he was going to wear them. He was going to wear them for a year, but I didn't see any pictures. So I'm not sure if he followed through with it. And good for you if you didn't follow through with it. That was the stupidest fucking thing you would ever do just to get people in the seats. Hang on one second because I'm going to elaborate on this, but I can't concentrate on answering my question until I find the vape that I just dropped.
All right. We're going to return to the mansion with unspoken owners and unspeakable things in just a second.
All right. So shit hit the fan at the mansion. And I had another addict slash alcoholic tell me that if I keep drinking, I'm going to get kicked out of the mansion. Like, not one more fucking drop. And I was like, oh, wow, coming from this fucking guy. And so I decided, all right, fine, I'll quit drinking. And I went like a day. And I was like, dude, fuck this. I'm a grown ass adult. I'll do whatever the fuck I want to. And so I just closed myself off in my room and did whatever the fuck I wanted to. Until I decided this isn't fucking working. Let me actually get sober. And you know, shit kind of hit the fan. And I left the mansion and ended up in a small little studio apartment, which was awesome because it was the first time in my life that I was living on my, like, completely alone. I've always had roommates, a wife, a daughter, parents. It was the first time that I was going to bed and waking up completely alone. And I was like, this is going to be great. I'm going to get so much fucking work done. The podcast is going to blow the fuck up because I have all this time, no distractions. Like, and when I walk in this house, if I'm in a bad mood, that's my own fucking fault because there ain't nobody else in here that's going to dictate how I feel today. And like, I was super excited. But the thing is that loneliness brings in that fucking craving. And there was a liquor store right across the street from that apartment. Like, I would look out of my window and it was staring at me in the face every single fucking day. So my sobriety was extremely short-lived there. And I'm sitting there doing the podcast. I'm lying to everybody around me, lying to people that care about me that are other podcasters and stuff. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm totally sober, you guys. Like, and then I'll do a show and then I'll listen to it as I'm editing. And I'm like, fuck, I can't even put this out. I'm slurring my words so fucking bad. Like, I can't even put it out. This is bad.
Can I ask, what was your alcohol of choice? Or was it just whatever was available?
I seem to like rebrand every time that I take a break and go back, but it's usually vodka or tequila, like a high-end vodka or tequila. And then as it goes and graduates to a problem and I'm drinking like a handle a day and I can't afford a $50 bottle of fucking Cabo Wabo or Patron, then it's like the $6.99 fucking behind the counter plastic bottle in a jug, you know?
Right. Like Popov or something.
Yeah, whatever I could find in the couch cushions to get, you know, like enough to like, because it gets bad, you know, like the cravings for alcohol, like I would betray my best friend for, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I feel like I just interrupted you and you were talking about your experience with the liquor store right across the street and lying to everyone around you.
Yeah, lying to everyone around me. And then we'll get back into my ex Veronica, because at this point my sister has some time sober under her belt and she thinks that I'm sober as well at this time. And I'm not, I'm drinking. And I get a call that Veronica's in the hospital and it's not looking too good. And if I want to be able to say goodbye to her, I better get my ass to California right now. And so I told my sister and she was like, well, fuck that. You're not going alone. And we went out there and I was detoxing from alcohol, like so fucking bad because my sister drove. I'm in the car with her and I can't drink in front of her. And she has no idea that I'm drinking and the amount that I had been drinking at that time. And so we're down there to go save or to go see my ex in the hospital so I could say goodbyes, who's dying from fucking alcohol while I'm going through detox. And anyways, by the time we get down there, she somehow was able to she excused herself from the hospital and was in some motel room. And so we go up in there and I go to talk to her and I was like, what's going on? And she's telling me, and I'm like, why aren't you at home? Why are you in this room? And she tells me that what happened, and they sold the house out from underneath her. And so I was like, is this all you have? Like, this is all you have? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, fuck it, get your shit together. I'm taking you back to Nevada with me and we're going to get you sober. And then she's like, I can't really even get up. And I was like, well, how bad is it? You know? And like in that time, me standing there, she ended up having three seizures. And so I'm like, you should not have left the fucking hospital. Like, you need to go back to the hospital. And so I called 911. They took her back to the hospital. And that was the last time that I seen her alive. And, but I knew that was going to be the last time that I seen her alive. I just knew it. I felt it. And I even told my sister that on the ride home. And so with that, I got home and I spent like another week just fucking drinking like ridiculous and super depressed to the point where I did not want to get out of bed. I had a 9-to-5 job that my dad gave me. He like runs this place and like pulled some strings and got me a job. I was there for about like a year just to pay the bills. Like that's all my jobs ever are, is just pay the bills so I could do my podcast. Cause that's all I give a fuck about is my podcast. It's like everything else is just so that I could do the podcast.
Right. I believe you said recently the podcast is your church, right? Am I misquoting you?
Yes, it is. It's my church. It's my therapy. It's everything to me. You know, it's my identity. I don't know what I would be without it. And that scares the shit out of me. So I forget where I'm at in the story, but anyways, I end up fucking off this job because I couldn't get out of bed. I'm like, fuck this. I don't even want to go to work. Like, go grab a broom. Like, that's beneath me. You know, like I went to school to be a graphic designer. Like, why am I doing this stupid fucking job? And so I just quit going. And obviously I lost the job. And because I lost the job, now I can't pay rent. I can't pay anything. And so I didn't give a fuck though. I'm like, I do not give a fuck. And so then I get an eviction notice and I'm like, oh fuck, dude, you're going to end up sleeping in your car. Like again. And so like, I don't want to go through this again. And so I drank myself damn near to death and I woke up, I don't know, maybe 6 something in the morning. The liquor store wasn't open yet. I'm already going through withdrawals and I'm just like, you want to quit? Just give in. And so I called my sister and I admitted that I had been fucking drinking and that if I don't go to a detox center, that I'm going to need to taper off. And me tapering off doesn't really work because I just keep it going. And so it wasn't even an hour. They came and picked me up. They had me in a detox center. I was in there for a little bit, lost my apartment. Was super scared again. As I had mentioned earlier, I found this motel room. Then my ex-fiance had passed. The motel room was horrible. It had plumbing issues. I woke up one morning and it smelled like shit. And I was like, what in the actual fuck? And I opened the door and the shower had filled with other people's toilet flushings. And it was bad, you know? And so like, I finally just got moved out of that room. I upgraded into a new room. Like my situation is fucked. Like I am in a motel, but I upgraded. It is got a little like half of a kitchen and a bathroom now. So it's not just like a tiny little room. I mean, it's still tiny. But I do pay $425 every single week just to keep this fucking roof over my head, which turns out to $1,700 a month, like, which is a fucking 3-bedroom house, you know, but because I fucked myself through my drinking, my credit is fucked, you know, like, thank God I got a job. I have a job now, like, and I actually do like it, even though I'm not doing graphic design or anything, but it reminds me of being in high school because it's metal shop. Basically, it's like going to metal shop class all fucking day.
Sweet.
It's pretty cool, you know? So that's kind of where I am right now. You know, like I'm still getting back on my feet. It's life, you know? I just keep focused on trying to do this show, but you know, I don't know if this show makes me happy anymore. I just said that it's my identity. And that's the only reason really why I haven't quit is because I don't know who I am without this fucking show. Like I've been doing this for 6 fucking years. Nobody knows who the fuck I am. You know, I had this ego that you're White Rabbit. You know, you're Catalyst Jones, the host of White Rabbit. Everybody knows who you're, the conspiracy king of all this shit next to Sam Tripley. And that's just not the fucking case. You know, like I'm in a group chat with other podcasters and I was bitching about something. And one of them in there was like, this was a few weeks back. And he was like, dude, I don't know who you are. And I was like, yeah, see, exactly. Like, who the fuck am I? Like, why was I walking around with this big ass fucking ego? And at the same time, it's like, I have dreams, you know, like, it's funny because I talked to Sam Tripoli on, and I don't even know if I should be saying this on the show, but I talked to Sam Tripoli on almost a daily basis. I talk to people that I really look up to. And one of my goals is to be on Tinfoil Hat. I've been on his little like only conspiracy shows, but I've never been on the main event. And I feel like if I quit before I get on Tinfoil Hat, then I failed. And I failed. This is the third major thing in my life that I put everything into and thought was going to go all the way with. And if I fucking fall at the finish line again, like, I just don't know if I could live with myself.
You knew I was going to hone in on you calling this your identity, right? So I knew you were like, you brought it back to that. And I was like, okay, we both honed in on that. I want to know, is your identity Catalyst Jones? Is it Bradley Hunt? Is it somewhere in between? And how do you differentiate between the different characters? And we all do this. I do this. You know, we all have different characters that we play based on necessity, survival, safety, dreams. And I want to know, where did Catalyst Jones come from? And do you feel that those two need to be separate, or are they integrating in a way?
That is a great question. Yes and no. Catalyst Jones was born in 2002. I had just suffered a detrimental ankle injury and decided that skateboarding wasn't going to be my life. And I moved back to my hometown. I didn't want to move back to my hometown with no money. So I robbed a coffee store in Los Angeles, got some fucking money, moved back to my hometown, used that money to start up a drug dealing business with some of my buddies. And then we got I was always into music, playing drums, singing, rapping. But then Eminem came out and made it okay for white people to be seriously rapping. And so I went back home, and there was a few other of my friends that felt the same way. And so we started really getting into music. And I was like, well, first off, the last name Hunt, I fucking hate that name. That is my sperm donor's last name. The man has never been around in my life, and I want nothing to do with him. Unfortunately, that's what it says on the birth certificate, and I've just never changed it. The man that raised me's last name is Jones. And so it's either Brad Jones or it's Catalyst Jones. And I actually told my sister about a year ago, like, how do you think mom would feel if I legally changed my name to Catalyst Jones? And she was like, she'll get over it. And I was like, yeah, like, what is it up with boomers and like the most unoriginal fucking names ever? But Catalyst Jones was born out of music, and we started making music, and we were trying to think of like what our names were going to be. And this guy named Tim, he said, we should call you Catalyst because you're like the spark that like always ignites shit. And I was like, I like it. And then I decided to spell it cat, K-A-T, like a cool cat. And then illest, I-L-L-I-S-T, as in illest, like the illest cat, like cat illest. And so it was a play on that is the reason why I spell it that way. And so I was 22 years old when Catalyst Jones was born. And it was my music alter ego. And then more and more of who I am started coming out in my music. I wasn't just necessarily making music that I thought people wanted to hear and dance to. I started opening my heart in this music. And then when I stopped making... Man, the music journey, I don't want to just over like glance over that, like as if it was just a blimp in my life, but like glancing over that, when I decided to start pursuing podcasting, I'm like, I was Catalyst Jones. Like, it was who I am. Like, I was no longer Brad. And so right now you're talking to Catalyst Jones 100% of the time. Unless I'm in a situation where I have to put a game face on at work, You're not going to get Catalyst Jones. You're not going to get the flat earth reptilian talking person that you see here on the White Rabbit podcast.
Gotcha. So Brad comes out for like basic professionalism, bitch matrix survival.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. That's a great answer. I would love to hear
more.
And
the only reason on Instagram it says my name is Bradley Hunt is because when they did this change, and in order to keep my blue check mark, I had to fucking show them my government issued ID. And they're like, well, you can't use Catalyst. I'm like, well, fuck, dude, I guarantee you that half these Hollywood people are have a Jewish last name, like legitimately, like they don't use their real fucking name. But anyways, that's just
right. Right. That took 47 minutes. I was wondering how long that would take.
Until I brought up the hat people.
Like we've got the clock on. So I would love to hear about your music career. I think we both, like when we initially connected with each other, it was over Truth, but also we both have musical backgrounds, albeit really differently. I was not a rapper. I'm sure everyone's shocked to know that. But I know how much of the music life gives you in teaching to serve your future life as whatever we end up being, an old Asian lady, etc. And so I want to know about like the meat of your musical career. What were the hardest times and what were the best times?
All right, awesome. So it started out as something like we took it very, very serious in the beginning. However, like I didn't realize what the music industry really was and what it was really about. Like I thought you were the best musician and then they fucking you're on MTV and the radio and that's all there is to it. You know, it's like, so we started making music. I'm listening to rappers that are out and comparing it to the shit that we're making. And I'm like, guys, we're better than them. Like we got this, we're going to be famous as fuck. And that's not how the music industry works. And so we ended up, all of us ended up paying our dues, you know, and we started out as a group. And then eventually we branched off and started doing our own thing. Some guys quit earlier than others, you know, but in my music journey, it took me all through it. It was fucking crazy. So honestly, like my first love was the drums. And when I was in high school, I was in a punk rock band playing drums. And I was also in a punk rock band singing. And like, that was just my kind of music, you know, but I also was like, I would listen to like NOFX and then I dig through my cassettes and then in the same breath, put in fucking Wu-Tang 36 Chambers, you know, like that was like my diversity as far as music goes. And so, you know, I did bring up Eminem, but he was kind of the catalyst for white people taking over the hip hop industry. And when he kind of emerged, I was like, why the fuck am I playing in these punk rock bands? Like I can make the music I really want to make. And because to me, hip hop at that time was the only genre of music where you were capable of blending every single genre of music.
Would you say and you felt like hip hop gave you the most freedom in a sense?
Yes. It gave me the most creative freedom because I love rock. I love country. I love classic. I love shit that is from all over the world. I love good music. I don't care what the fuck the label says on it, you know? And so with hip hop, you can incorporate all these musics that you love and it's still hip hop. And I thought that was just fucking beautiful. And so I went into making music for music and because I saw a future in it. And so, you know, I found myself touring, opening up for Afro Man, like the Loonies. I basically, anybody that's famous that came out of the Bay Area, I've opened up for, produced a track for, done an album cover for artistically, and or fucking something, you know, like if they're from California and they're a washed up rapper who has made it or come close to making it out of California, I fucked with them.
Damn. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yes. And so in my music travels, I ended up signing with an underground record label called Reality Movement. And when I signed with them, I had a manager and a public relations lady. And without getting too specific, both of those people ended up fucking me over. But in the process of that, I was offered a development deal from Sony for $100,000 to develop my music. And I took that contract to a few different people. And somebody that I really look up to and respected looked at that shit and said, if you sign that contract, not only are you not ever going to get what you want out of music, but you're going to end up owing them like $200,000. And I was like, oh, fuck. Yeah, because what they do is they'll give you this money, and somebody that's never had that kind of money in their life is like, we fucking made it. And then you go blow it. You buy a car. You buy shoes. You do all this stuff. You make an album. Then you release your album. And you don't realize that the music label only does like two or three breakouts in 1 year in the mainstream music industry. And they're not wasting their time and money on you. What they are doing is they're giving you a loan because they know they're about to fuck you, because they're not going to promote your album. When you're finished recording, you're going to get a hefty bill for all the studio time that you use that $100,000 is supposed to be going in. So ultimately you owe them $100,000 on top of the money that you took for the music videos, the studio time. You're going on tour, the tour bus, the people that have to be hired to set up the stages, like all that shit comes out of the artist. And that's all in the fine print. And if you don't know what you're doing, you fuck yourself. Not only that, hip hop is gay as fuck, man. It's gay as fuck. And everybody that I used to look up to, like, I can't even fucking look at them the same anymore, okay? So my public relations lady was trying to open me up to doing butt stuff. She honeypotted me for sure. She got me drunk off my favorite fucking tequila one night, asked me to come up in the room with her. We fucking hook up. The next day, she gives me roadhead, and then she's like, do you like anal? And I was like, no, not really. It's the wrong texture. And then she was like, oh, I'll get you to like it. And then she's like trying to do butt stuff, not only me to her, but her to me and shit, right? And I'm like, well, this is kind of fucking weird. And then she was like, would you like to watch me get railed by? And she named this fucking rapper guy out of Reno and was trying to get me naked in a room with her and another guy naked and shit. And I'm like, what? Is this how this shit starts? You know, like this is fucking weird. And so I wasn't down with any of that shit. And I'm pretty sure that my manager and her, because they were fucking too. And I'm pretty sure that they collaborated and got me arrested because there were cops waiting for me when I was leaving a bar one night, like waiting specifically for me. And I didn't see them. They watched me get in my fucking car, turn the car on, and then they were just all whoop, right behind me. And I was already on probation for a DUI. And so, like, I ended up having to do, like, fucking 6 months of a new sentence and what was remaining on my 6 months from the other sentence. And by that time, I got out, and, like, my manager, the public relations lady, the people that I was producing at the time, because not only was I an artist, but I was, like, the Kanye. I was producing all the other artists on that fucking label. Mm-hmm. And it was ghost town when I got out of there. And I was like, oh, you motherfuckers fucked me.
Holy shit. I mean, silver lining, if you're going to be a rapper or a hip hop artist, even though it's super gay, you got to have some jail time. So you check that off the list, at least.
That's what I was thinking, right? I'm like, now I got like a long sentence, right? Like now I can brag about some shit. And like, I'm sitting in there, it's like, no commissary. I'm calling, like, collect calls, you know, like, usually you can hear who answers the phone. And, like, there was a couple times when it wasn't my manager's wife that answered. It was him. And it fucking said, sorry, this call is not going. I'm like, fuck this motherfucker, dude. Like, I'm done. And, you know, like, during that time, I started getting, after that time, I was like, fuck everybody, I'll do it myself. Like, I took on the whole Tech Nine mentality. And I'm like, what are these fuckers doing that I'm not doing? I'm like, do it that wilt. See a lot of owls. See a lot of stars. see a lot of occult shit. What's going on with this occult shit? What does it do with that wilt? And I started looking into a Lester Crowley.
Mm-hmm. Like, wow, dude, all roads lead there, don't they?
I like the way this guy thinks. I want to know more. This is fucking crazy. Is the world really like this? And so that was my introduction into esoteric teachings and occultism. And in doing that, I got pretty deep into it, heavy into it, practicing stuff. And my merch for my music was heavily occultic tied, satanic, very thalomic. Owls, my logo was an owl, actually. And one night I just finished making a commercial for a new shirt that I had posted. And I clipped a audio from Chris Webby, and he has this song called Sell Your Soul. And it's talking about how he'll never sell out. How he'll never sell out to the music industry. But the hook goes, why don't you sell your soul? And so I was like, ooh, that's perfect, right? Like with my owl and everything. And so I make this commercial to launch my new shirt, and it shows my owl rise up behind the Golden Gate Bridge. And then all of a sudden it says, sell your soul in that song. And then the Golden Gate Bridge gets taken out by this huge fucking flame. And then my shirt appears and my owl comes out of the water. And I was like, dude, that is gnarly. And I get up, I hit fucking post, and I added the shirt to my website so that people could buy it. And I stand up and I go to turn around and walk to my bed. And as I turn around, somebody fucking, you know, like when somebody just shoves you and you like take a couple steps forward and like either you fall or you don't. Well, I fucking stumbled forward. I fell and I go to like, what the fuck? And as soon as I go, what the fuck, is boom. And I'm like on the ground, and I'm just like on the fucking ground. And like, I don't see anything, and I'm trying to scream out, and like, nothing's really coming out. And I know exactly what the fuck. Well, I thought I knew what it was at the time. I thought it was a demon. Now I'm not so sure, but nothing was vocal, but in my body, I felt that I was promoting false idols. And if I continue this route, I'm going to be punished. And I was able to mutter up enough to get some sounds out. And my roommate and his girlfriend ran in and saw me on the ground, like struggling. And they go to try to lift me up off of the ground. And they're like, stop fighting me. And I was like, I'm not in my, I can't say anything. Like I'm trying to, but in my head, I'm like, I'm not fighting you guys. Fuck. And then it just stopped. It just fucking stopped. And they fucking lifted me up off of the ground. And I pushed George out of the way and I ran to my computer and I disabled that website and I stopped making music in that sense. I took the owl went away. I started White Rabbit and here we are. Well, that was almost seven wild. Years ago.
Wild. So math is not my strong suit. So that was like 2018 or so, 2017.
Yeah, it was around then because I was toying with a bunch of different names that are podcasts now too, by the way, which I think is awesome. It's like I pulled out the list of names that I had. I came across it as I was putting some stuff into my storage. And it's crazy. I had Forbidden Knowledge, which is a podcast, and I'm actually friends with the guy.
I also thought of that name like way years ago, and then I found his podcast and I love it. To this day, I love the podcast. But I was like, oh, I thought of that too. Shit.
Yes. Secret Teachings. However, that was around before my podcast. I just wasn't hip to the game, but there is a podcast out there called Secret Teachings with Ryan Gable. Mm-hmm. And there was a couple other ones, and for some reason I ended up sticking with White Rabbit, and I kind of regret going with that because it's such a popular name for conspiracies that people come out of the woodworks that have no idea who I am that try to start podcasts called White Rabbit. And it's pretty fucking irritating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I follow one on Instagram. It's a girl. She's nice. She's cool. She's lovely. But I was like, oh, it can only be one.
Well, does she go by White Rabbit Reality and also 420 Feminist?
No, different person.
Okay. And then there's another female who attempted to call her show White Rabbit. And I was like, hey there, I exist and stuff. And she was like, oh shit. And now she goes by down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Yep. I think that was her. Yeah. And then there's another White Rabbit podcast that's like really normie that I discovered when I was trying to find your YouTube. I think maybe you were off YouTube for a while and I found them and I started watching it and I was like, or still? Okay. And yeah, it was just
actually
was
that wretched. Not the same. We could talk about that. About a month ago, YouTube gave me my channel back. And I went on there and all of my old videos and stuff are gone. It's just basically I'm starting over from scratch. But I believe this is going to be, if I don't quit podcasting, this is going to be the first episode on that YouTube. If not, it's going to be the only episode on that YouTube channel.
Cool. Yeah. I like they tell you play by the rules and you can stay. You know what?
That's just the thing, you know, and as
make my own damn rules.
Everybody's like, well, why don't you just create another account like through a different email? And I was like, well, I actually did that. And this is the third time they got rid of me and they actually have my fucking IP address now. So on my computer, there was like for years, I couldn't even watch YouTube videos on my computer. I had to do it from my fucking phone or my Xbox.
Good Lord. That's how you know you're onto something though, right? So
right.
There's that. I want to hop back a little bit to when you were talking about quitting the podcast, how this is your identity. We want to be on Tinfoil Hat. Shout out to Sam. Heyo. And a phrase that you used was end of the line, I think. As in like reaching the peak of the podcast. So in your mind, what would make you feel whole and successful? Like you hadn't failed and you had succeeded in what you set out to do with regards to this podcast. What exactly is the missing piece that you're still searching for?
Well, there's two, and I'll be okay with just one of them. But when I very first set out to do my podcast was I had three goals and I accomplished one of them my first year podcasting, and that was to get Flat Earth Dave on my show. And then it was to get on Tinfoil Hat. And I halfway accomplished that. Like I said, I was on his only conspiracy shows. But, you know, I may to this day have something greater than ever being on Tinfoil Hat. And that's just between me and my own thoughts. And I'll keep that at that. But what else I set out to do was to make it my full-time profession, was to quit all of my jobs and specifically podcast or content create. Because if I can make this my full-time profession, it's not just going to be the podcast. There's so much shit that I want to do creatively that I just can't with the time that I have. The podcast, I don't even have time to do the podcast the way that I want to do it. So there's that. And I said, I don't want to fall right before the finish line. So if I was to get onto Tinfoil Hat, I would feel like I at least crossed that finish line. I ran the marathon and I finished the race. I would be okay with that. But I didn't win the race. If I want to win the race, it's got to become my full-time profession.
Gotcha. And you said that you can't do the podcast how you really want to do it because of the time you have. If you had the time that you need, what else would you do with the podcast? Can you share that with us?
Oh, yes. Okay. So the podcast wouldn't be stationary. I would, and I actually had this idea before I found out about Steve-O's Wild Ride. So guys, don't tell me that I'm biting off of another podcaster's style, because how many fucking rappers are there in the world? Give me a break. So anyways, but what I am going to say is this, is I would get a travel van and I would turn it into a mobile studio. And I would travel across the United States or where I could drive to. You know, I could drive into Canada, Mexico, where I could drive. And I would visit crazy places where conspiracies, hauntings, abnormal things happen. And I will do a little digging, walk around, film some stuff. And during that episode, it won't just be a podcast. There's going to be an entire, it'll be like a movie every time. So you're going to have like all of the crazy footage that I come across. And then in each area, I'm going to have on somebody that I highly respect for that each episode. And Not only that, there will be a stationary place as well. I want to have the conspiracy game show that I've been wanting to do for like 5 years now. I can't do that the way that I really want to do that unless I have like an actual studio that people can come to. And that's highly doable. It doesn't cost as much money as you would think, but like, I just cannot do that working the fucking time that I work at a normal punch in punch out job and what I'm doing now. And just to see what would blossom from those things, you know, the connections that I'd make. And then, but that would be the starting point right there, is just blow it up like that. And then I'm sure I would just make so many amazing connections with people, and who knows what would birth out of that.
Yeah. That sounds awesome. I can see it all unfolding. I'm going to use the word when instead of if, because you just did. And I like that vibe. So when you go on your first mobile podcast van shoot, where is your first location? Where is that place of your most enthusiastic conspiracy?
Well, I would start it. It wouldn't be my most enthusiastic conspiracy. What it would be in order of traveling. And so I would start at one end of the United States and work my way to the other end. And since I'm closest to Vegas, I would probably start in Vegas or the far, far end of California and work my way over to New York.
Logical. Right now, like it.
Yeah. Right now, there are some things in my area that I'm going to do, even if I quit podcasting. I'm still going to do this. I've been talking to a Native American guy that can get me access that us white people can't access at some of these reservations. And there is a reservation at Pyramid Lake, and there's all kinds of creepy things surrounding Pyramid Lake with water babies and a dog man and UFOs. And so I'm going to be camping there for 3 or 4 days with this chief, and I'm going to be filming the entire time that I'm there and hopefully catch some crazy shit and put it into a little mini doc for everyone.
Ooh,
and so that'll give you a taste of the kind of things that I would be able to do in my van.
Yes. That you will do in your fucking van. Yes. Question that's not important, but it's important to me. Would you decorate your van? Would you personalize your van? Would you make it look really noticeable, or would you be more incognito?
The wrap has already been designed for about 4 years.
Okay.
it looks awesome. It's called the Conspiracy Caravan. It's all black, and it's got the digital matrix code falling all around it. And it's got my white rabbit peeking its head out from behind. And yeah, it says question everything on the bottom runner.
Well, yes, this was the answer I was hoping for. I love that. I want to kind of bring it down into the nitty gritty for a bit, even though we're kind of up here in the energy of hopeful positivity. But there's a conspiracy that I am sure is floating around out there that you have had to deal with a bunch of times in your almost seven seasons of your show, and even before that. And that's the conspiracy of people deciding that they know you based on your content. You know, oh, he's racist. Oh, he's this. Oh, he's that. He's a bossy sad sack. He's an egomaniac. How have you noticed yourself evolving throughout the years from those attacks, those assumptions? And how do you react to those people that immediately just slap a label on you that they are deeming as correct and undesirable?
So the way that I used to react and the way that I react now is drastically changed. Before, I would go to battle with those people. And also, it was very important to me that I changed people's minds. Like, this is the truth. Like, it's right in front of your face. How can you not see it? I'm not going to sleep. We're not going to sleep until you fucking see things for the way that they really are, you know? And now I don't care. I don't care what anyone believes, because honestly, I've lost too many friendships, relationships with family members over this dumb shit. So the way that I would respond is, man, I would put my fucking armor on. I would grab my breastplate and my sword, and I'd be like, here's my line in the sand, motherfucker, let's go. And online was the same way, man. Because I come from a rapping background, I am a wordsmith and I also come from a battle rapping background. And when I battle rap, my goal is to make you punch me. Because if you punch me, that means lyrically I have defeated you. And so coming with that mindset online is a very dangerous fucking thing. And I would probably make people question their very existence and everything they stood for and be happy to do so. Now, people will come at me with the most hurtful, harmful, hateful things because of the things that I talk about and the things that I believe in. And I will respond with things like, I will pray for you. Stuff like that. I'm sorry that you feel that way. Or I'm sorry that 30 seconds of this 1 hour, an hour and a half conversation is what you gathered from. And stuff like that, you know? I am very passive aggressive. I am like, fuck you without being fuck you.
Kill them with kindness, man. That's what I always say.
And as far as my personal life goes, like I said, you know, there was a time where I didn't think that I was going to talk to any of my family members for the rest of my life. Because during the whole pandemic, we had different opinions on the vaccine, and it caused us to have a huge fallout in the entire family. We lost family members, and instead of being emotionally supportive and understanding of their feelings, I was like, I fucking told you guys to listen to me. And shit like that. That just wasn't necessary. You know, like I insulted my parents' religion and shit like that. And they didn't talk to me for a long time. And then it took me having to lose people that I thought were unconditionally going to always be there no matter what. Mm-hmm. Like it took them turning their back on me to realize like, it is important. It is important, but it's only important to wake up those that need to be woken up. Those people in my everyday life may not be for them to wake up. Their right. life might not be that. And so I have to respect that. And I have to understand to enjoy the things about them that I can. And when I'm with them, not bring up those things that are going to cause issues. So I try to tread lightly. It's not always easy, you know, because some people will bring up some things and I'll be like, and bite my tongue.
Right. And then your tongue's bleeding down your neck and you're like, oh shit, growth. Yay.
Yes. You know, but like at the end of the day, like, I've realized that relationships with those people that matter to you are way more important than if they believe the shape of the earth is the same thing that you believe.
Yeah. Wow. This is like hitting me really deeply because I know lots of us have been on this journey for especially the last 5 years, if not longer. And it is a burner of a journey. And so I love that you have consciously, with great intention and meticulous attention, gotten to the point where you can say everything that you just said and mean it. Like I can feel through the screen that it's not just word salad. You have really gotten to that point. And I know maybe sometimes we can all backslide a little bit, right? But we catch ourselves and we're like, no, we've already done that. And it didn't work out in our favor. And therefore it doesn't work out in other people's favors. So let's choose a different route, a different right. route. Yeah.
The things that I talk about are very dangerous. And so there are going to be people that leave my life, regardless of how I react to them and how I try to talk to them or make them understand where I'm coming from. I lost my best friend from fourth grade. He's still with us. He is alive. I just lost him. He thinks that I am the biggest racist piece of shit to ever walk the planet. And when Kanye West came out with his song, I made a post of my rabbit holding a sign. And I believe it said, if Kanye's song said, "Hail Satan," none of you would have batted an eye. And that's the fucking problem. And he said that was the final straw and stopped talking to me. So it's going to happen. It's going to happen. But you know what? I'm not going to apologize for that because that's just not who he is. And he's not awakened to that part yet. Because if I was to hear some of the stuff coming out of my mouth 5 or 6 years ago, what's coming out of my mouth now and the things that I'm posting now, I would think that I'm the most hateful person ever. Like, I was grown up with it embedded in my mind that Hitler is the epitome of evil. As a matter of fact, go grab a Webster's dictionary right now and look up evil. His face is probably right next to it. So that's just like how everybody is instilled in their brain. So if you have these, like, just like the most evil image of somebody, and then your friend is like, hey, it wasn't that bad actually, you like, it's gonna make you feel a certain way. And so even though it hurts, I understand why he had to excuse himself from my life.
Right. When you threaten someone else's reality that they're comfortable with, it's a disaster often.
Right.
Yeah. So what do you say to the people that call you racist? Do you try to explain yourself away, or do you just say, okay, that's fine if you think that?
Yeah, the latter. I thank you. Like, go ahead and look in the mirror and tell yourself that you're not. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Like that's all I have to say, honestly.
Right.
Like, yeah, I'm like Sydney Sweeney. Like, I'm just going to smile at him.
Yeah.
Because you know what? I am racist. I am. I'm a white nationalist. Because I don't want harm on any other race, but I also see that it's better if our races, our cultures are kept preserved. And I don't think that the United States is good for the human race. I really don't. I think that mixing all of this takes away what makes every individual truly beautiful. And I say that I'm racist not with hate in my heart. I'm racist in the fact that the only hate that I have is the hate that we can't see the beauty in our differences.
Yeah. So well said. So well said. I hope that whoever stopped listening at that first part, that they come back and they finish the sentence so they can really get the full grasp of what you're saying, because I think when you boil it down to it, that is what we're all forgetting. Every single person. Oh gosh, you said something earlier in another podcast that was akin to, I'm going to sleep well at night, regardless of if they wake up or not. Right. And I want to ask you, did you ever have the loops that would start first off in the morning where you would have those imaginary fights with people who were still deeply sleeping? A battle mode of mind where you just wake up, you're brushing your teeth, you're taking out the trash, whatever, you're going to work, and you're just replaying all the different ways that you could possibly go about convincing someone. Did that happen to you?
Yeah, man. I think that's like a daily thing for most people. I'll have conversations with how I think conversations should have went. Is that what you're getting at?
Mm-hmm. Or not even just should have went, but could go. Conversations, yes, that you probably won't even have the opportunity to do, but we're still looping them in our brain.
That is hilarious that you bring that up. So that's something that's talked about in the recovery rooms quite a bit. Okay. Is how much time do we sit there and stress about these scenarios in our head that never even come to fruition, right? We sit there, and don't get me wrong, I do this all the time. I will play out the worst case scenario in almost every single situation that I'm in. And I think that if done the right way, that's a good tool to have. As long as you don't dwell on the worst case scenario for too long, just be aware of it. Be aware that that's a possibility so that you're prepared for it. But where we find ourselves hung up on is when we're having these arguments with people that don't fucking happen. And that's hatred. That person sitting in their car driving, listening to their fucking favorite song right now, drinking some shit, thinking about the great sex they had last night.
Right.
And you're sitting there wasting
water jug thing that everyone has now. They're just,
yeah.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there wasting your time, your energy, and not to mention your creativity on hatred, on something that's not even real. It's not even real. You know, like, if she listens to this, you know what, I'm not going to say who this was, but somebody close to me had reached out to me, recently and was in a situation where they were in a public situation with their boyfriend, and there was a female that hugged her boyfriend a little too long for her comfort. And she talked to me about it. And she played all these scenarios in her head. This guy leaving her and starting a new life with this girl and leaving her and her daughter and all of these things. And I'm just like, how much time have you wasted thinking about this that's never even going to happen? And then you know what happened a week later? On Christmas Eve, he asked her to marry her. So we...
Oh my gosh, plot twist. Wow.
We spend so much time thinking about the bad and in this huge imagination that we have. But I challenge everybody listening to this right now, what if you were to flip that? What if you were to spend so much time focused on the most insane, amazing, great outcome possible, like the greatest possible outcome from a fucking scenario? What if you spent more time on that? Because this is what happens with thoughts. Nothing real in this world was never started without first being a thought. And if you sit on negative thoughts too long, then they're going to become words. And then when they become words, they're going to become reality. So you sit there and you're like, my fucking girlfriend is cheating on me. I know she is. I know she is. And you think this in your mind so much and you dwell on it that you fucking make it become a reality because it's already real in your head. And so that's what your reality is. And this morning when I was telling you, you know, like I just woke up in a shit fucking mood and you were like, we can move the podcast. And I was like, no, because I'll be mad at myself if I don't do it. I am in control of my feelings and my thoughts. I just got to grab the fucking steering wheel.
Yeah. Mad respect for that. Mad respect for sure. I mean, it's true. Our imagination is our greatest gift. I always say it's the gateway drug to all that is possible. But the thing about the greatest gifts is they can also be our greatest abusers, right? We're just over here whipping ourselves daily with our imagination rather than using it to our advantage. And I think that's perhaps the biggest hurdle that we all face, every single human in this experience, is learning how to let our beautiful mind be beautiful rather than a torment.
And a torment is a great thing because there are emo people, and I don't mean like people that listen to emo and wear black lipstick and shit like that. I mean, like there is emotional people that are deep, dark in their thoughts. And I'll be like, just do something creative. And they're like, I don't have a creative bone in my body. I'm like, bullshit. You create all these negative scenarios in your head that you fucking live in all day. Create something else.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely. I mean, and I'm definitely not saying we should have a life without pain or without shit or hardship, because that's how we get art, right? That's where our creativeness comes from for the most part. That's where our expression comes from. But anyway, I'm getting off track. I want to ask you, do you believe in regrets?
Do I believe in regrets?
Yeah. You used that word earlier and it was a question I had written down. I love asking this of everyone because I think it's interesting.
I do. I believe in regrets because I hold a lot of them.
Mm. Is there a certain...
I regret not getting sober for my daughter when she was young. I regret some of the early relationships that I had, not taking them seriously and hurting people, just being young and stupid. I regret wasting 46 years of my life drinking, talking about what I should be instead of actually doing something to be that person.
I'm going to flip-flop the question from when we started. In the next 12 months, what are the three words that you want to embody this year? Leaving those other three words behind.
Sobriety, happiness, and is there a word for giving it away?
Giving away what? Happiness?
Everything that I have to offer, whether it's holding the door open for somebody, whether somebody reaches out to me and says they don't want to drink anymore, whether somebody's broke down on the side of the road, instead of driving by saying that sucks, pull over and asking them if they need some help.
Yeah. I would say that word is service. What do you think?
Service. Yes. So those are my three words then.
Yeah.
Sobriety, happiness, and service. But man, epic. I got a list. I got a list. You want to see my list for 2026?
Do I?
So you know we can't just have three words, because I believe those words didn't even make my list. But well, here's my 2026 goals. I want to hit 1 year sober, get in and maintain great physical health and shape, get new teeth or dentures. A lot of people don't know this, but like, I don't have any bottom teeth. I made these out of plastic and I can't afford dentures. So like, I walk around with this plastic thing that I fucking made to make it look like I have teeth.
How long have you been wearing them?
About five. It gets worse because I keep losing teeth because the plastic is like making me lose other teeth. It started out with two teeth that I lost fucking hitting my on the handlebars of my bicycle, and fucking it knocked them loose. And I went to the dentist and he was like, they're gone, and he yanked them. And so I couldn't afford to get them replaced. And me being creative, I melted plastic into teeth, and fucking I've been doing that ever since. I was supposed to get dentures like four or five months ago. I had the appointment and everything, and then I got this new job, and my start date was the same date that as my appointment to go get all the teeth yanked out that I have remaining. And so I wasn't able to do it. And unfortunately, now that I have a job, I don't have the Medicaid, government Medicaid anymore. And so it's going to be like fucking $13,000. And yeah, anyways.
Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
That's a unique fact about you. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Girls. Most people don't know that. It's quite embarrassing, so I don't talk about it. A reliable car, start a business, or find a new permanent career if the show does not blow up. See my daughter at least every season of the year. Well, those aren't the ones. Those are not. And damn it, they're not. I had things that was like work hard, train, eat healthy, shit like that. And I don't see it on here, but yeah, like you guys don't want to know my fucking goals for 2026.
Oh no, we do. I was going to ask you something along the lines of, what are your current strengths that you will completely own up to, shout from the top of the fucking mountain? If you're sitting in a circle after apocalypse, I think we already know we're in this very slow apocalypse right now, but apocalypse has come. We're in a circle. We're going around saying what our strengths are as a offering of service, right? What are the things that you address for yourself, and what do you want to get better at in the next year?
My strengths, and I will die on this hill, is the ego that I have for my graphic design, video editing, animation, all of that stuff. I am better at that shit than any other fucking podcaster doing it. And I will say that proudly, stand here and do it, because I'm probably, with the exception of Prometheus Lens Doc Brown, the only one that does it to the degree that I do and is the podcast host, editor, fucking does everything. Like, there are shows out there that have great promos, great graphics and stuff like that, but all that guy has to do is show up and sit in front of a fucking microphone. So right. I own.
I don't know if you lost me or I lost you. But we lost Catalyst on I own, which is a pretty great pause.
Yo, my
there you are. You're back.
My internet cut out, so hopefully we can keep this going here.
All right, we're back. We lost you on I own. You were owning your awesomeness.
Oh, yeah. I own podcasting promotions, and I own saying that.
Yeah, I was just saying that to a friend the other day when I was telling her about this show. I was like, he is fucking excellent at this shit. It blows my mind. So good on you. And what do you want to get better at in the next year? It can be one thing. It can be whatever. What is something you know you could be better about?
So I don't know if you're aware of this, but the internet just cut out again. So the last thing I heard is, what is something you're aware of that you could be better about?
Yeah. Yeah. What do you want to improve on?
Communication. Honestly, it is important for me to think about things that I say before I say them, because as I got into it with you earlier, like, I can lash out at people. And if I'm in a really bad mood and read a bad comment on the internet, there's a good chance that I'm going to fly off the handle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Growth is not perfect. I can fly off the handle too, since we're being honest here. I want to ask you something about the grief of such a shocking and hard goodbye to someone very close to you. What did that grief teach you? About yourself, and maybe also about others.
I don't know, because I'm still kind of holding a lot of it. I haven't really opened up about this to my sponsor or my recovery group. When it first happened, was also right around the time I got that new job. So I had to go to, it was the same week that I got that new job. So I had to go to work and pretend like nothing was happening. And so I'm not really sure that I have accepted and grieved yet. The very first day, I screamed a lot. I put my face in the pillow and I just screamed like really fucking loud. And I catch myself like crying at work sometimes, you know. I'll have to step outside and catch my breath and like shake it off and shit, you know? But what did I learn is that, I'll tell you what, man, this is what I learned, is not everything is going to be accomplished that we want to accomplish. Not everything is going to be revealed to us before we leave here. And we're thinking that there's some big grand prize at the end of all this. Like, there isn't. It could just go away.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn.
Oh, speak of the devil, Sam Tripley is texting me right now.
Amazing.
He's going to call me in a few, actually. So
perfect.
So, yeah, so we are coming to the end of this anyway. I'm not cutting you short. If he ends up calling, I'll just call him back. That's fine.
Okay. You mentioned, as I assumed you would, being a dad, and that seems to be one of the biggest regrets that you have around giving your daughter a better setup for life. What has being a dad taught you about yourself that you don't think you would have learned otherwise?
Right out the gate, it was respect for women, because I looked at them as sex objects until my daughter was born. And then it's a whole new respect for my parents as well. Like, just being a parent and life, right? The sacrifices that your parents make, you don't realize until you become a parent yourself. You know, like, my mom probably could have been a famous singer and then she had me. I'm not saying that I could have been a famous rapper and then I had my daughter. Like, I could have still been a famous rapper, but that wasn't for me. So my daughter didn't take anything away from me. She gave me everything because I didn't think I was ready. And I also wanted a boy. And so it was like, not only am I not ready, but it's not going to be somebody I could skateboard with. Are you fucking kidding me? And just so everybody listening to this knows, my daughter can bust one of the cleanest fucking pop shove-its ever. So I was totally wrong about that. And having a girl teaches you so much. And it's just, thank God her mom stepped up to the plate though, like right around the time that changes were happening, because I don't know if I could have handled that on my own. And so her mom ended up coming into her life, back into her life around fourth grade. And it was like kind of perfect timing. I'm like, oh, thank God. Like, I don't know if I would have been able to do this one, you know, like, and so she ended up like growing a relationship with her mom and moving in with her mom, for middle school. And thank God, because her mom allowed her to have the growing up through middle school and high school that I definitely would not have. She was way more lenient than I would have been. It's like, What do you mean you're talking to a boy? Like, no, you can't talk to a boy until you're 30. What the fuck do you mean? Like, obviously exaggerating, but you know, and my daughter is with somebody right now that I respect and I think treats her very well. And so until he fucks that up, he has my blessings.
Nice. Nice. Well, she's got a great dad from where I sit. The last question I want to ask you, I think, is something that I know a lot of us have been through, but I don't hear it talked about a lot. For one reason, I think, is because most people, unfortunately, aren't comfortable with admitting when they were wrong or when they've been duped. There's something about an identity with an opinion that is just so hard to acknowledge outwardly in a public space. And I know during the what we call the awakening or the remembering evolution, there's like stages, right? Like you discover 9/11, where you discover Alex Jones, yada, yada, yada. There's all these steps. And then eventually you kind of age out of certain people or certain beliefs and you move on to the next thing. And it's a really good way to kind of easily identify where a person is in the stages, with the caveat that everyone learns a little bit differently, but you know what I'm saying. So I want to know, what were you really all in on in the earlier stages of your awakening that now you're just like mortified? Oh my God, I can't believe I went all in with that. And what was it that made you change your mind?
Well, that's super easy. And it's not that big of a secret. It's Q.
Okay.
And it was Q because the first thing that like I really wanted to get into with my podcast was Flat Earth. However, I was deep into Q for like 2 years before I even started podcasting. And like, I'm reading these posts, I'm listening to podcasts, and I'm like, these guys don't know what the fuck they're talking about. And so when I started White Rabbit, it was actually spelled WHYTERABBI7, so that there was a 17 in there because 17 is the 17th letter of the alphabet is Q. So wow. I was like shouting out Q even in the spelling of White Rabbit. And, you know, I was wearing the MAGA hat. I was wearing Q shirts. And I was, Donald Trump is going to take out the white, and you know, the white hats are going to take out.
Drain the swamp.
Yep. I fell for it, man. I was all about it. And what it was is Q was the shopping mall for every conspiracy theorist. It was like the little hub of everything. It had some flat earth. It had some fucking child trafficking. It had some occult rituals. It had like adrenochrome. It's like fucking this magical fucking world of conspiracy. Is like, come on, everybody. Like, you guys don't have to be out there by yourselves anymore. Come on, check this shit out. And so I was like, fuck yeah, man, I'm coming. And so like I went. And like, I fell in love with the like, community, you know, like James from We the People Radio, like, and him and I started like talking a lot about what could be going down and just deciphering the Q drops. And then like, we became good friends and I start doing things behind the scenes for his show and like all the graphics and stuff. And like started talking to like Steaks for Breakfast and like Red Pill Babe and fucking La La Beams and like all these people that are huge in the Q movement, and they're like welcoming me with open arms, and I'm like, fuck yeah. And then while I'm in the midst of the Q movement, like me being critical, and I'm seeing some of these things, and I'm like looking and like, I'm not sure I can let that one slide. And then there was like a couple things where I was even on the Patriot Podcast Network on Roku as the only conspiracy show because I was like fucking MAGA leaning. And I was like, so this is going to shock everybody, but fuck you, fuck Donald Trump. And pretty much in one episode, I was just like, fuck it all. And it was actually Nick from the Occult Rejects that came on my show. And it was during the time that the fucking, what were the stones called that got taken down? It was like a mini little The Georgia Guidestones got taken down. And I like made this video where I'm like celebrating and I posted it and everything. And then Nick from the Occult Rejects was like, you realize that you just took part in an occult ritual. And I was like, what do you mean? And he like broke down to me what exactly it all was. And I was like, oh, fuck. And I was like, taken the recipe for that occult ritual and I applied it as a blanket over Q. And then I was like, oh man, this can't be. And then like I started looking into more, and then like I backtracked. Oh, wait a minute. Like, is there? Yep, there's a picture of Donald Trump with his hand on the fucking wall. All right, here we go. We're fucked.
Abort mission.
Yep.
Oh man. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a big one too, for sure. Well, thank you so much for sharing, and thank you for sharing your birthday with me. If you could leave the world the fuck behind and you leave everyone that is able and willing to listen to you with a little drop of, we'll call it a catalyst drop instead of a Q drop of advice, what would that advice be in the present moment?
Be kind. That's it. Like, honestly, just be kind, because we're all here experiencing this for the first times ourselves, and none of us got it right. Like, none of us do. And there is no reason to have an ego. So get rid of it. I don't care if you're Joe Rogan, Elvis Presley, Donald Trump, you don't deserve that ego. If they don't deserve that ego, people like me don't deserve the ego that I used to walk around with. Once you start to kill that ego, you're going to realize that the world is a much more beautiful place.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing everything. And I will go out and be kind, if you will. Pinky swear. Bitchin'. Happy fucking birthday.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing my birthday with me. That was awesome. And you fucking crushed that shit. That was so good. That was very good. And I can't wait to hear your podcast if whenever comes. But you're a natural and you should be doing this.
I appreciate that. I do. I'll let you know.
You know, I'm gonna break here, and I'm gonna take the controls, and I'm gonna end this the way that we always do, and that is keep digging down those rabbit holes.
Shatter the matrix. Catalyst on the mic, exposing fake and gay shit. Conspiracy junkies, we don't fuck with no sheep.
Awaken the lions, let the weak stay asleep. Follow the rabbit down the hole we go. Are we stuck in the matrix? Shit, I don't know. Secrets revealed, all lies exposed. Catalyst Jones will never be controlled.
Flat earth whispers cut the mainstream's haze. MK Ultra's grip, minds locked in a maze. Hollywood veil, coded scripts in the frame. Peel back the
system's design, whispers in the dark where the secrets align. Rip through the code, I'm done with their plan. Unplug my soul, I'm a free fucking man.
Zionist circles plot, powers it in the vault. Truth buried deep, but I'm calling their fault. Call me anti-Semitic, go ahead, fuck it, that's fine. Got no feelings for your feelings, truth's my only line.
Follow the rabbit down the hole we go. Are we stuck in the matrix? Shit, I don't.